if you were strip searched between July 13th, 2006 and July 1st, 2011.
You are listening to Pirate Block Radio with me, your host, Malte Leander, and today we are chatting with some members of the lab at Eastern Block here in Montreal, a creator space where a wide variety of projects are being worked on. One of these members that I'm speaking with today is Roby Provost, a tech world builder navigating the space between video games and internet art through his interactive creations. Thanks for coming on the show to talk to me today, Roby.
Well, it's a pleasure, Malte. I'm glad to be on after hearing about the show for many years.
Thanks for that. So I figured that we could talk a bit generally about your practice and your tools that you're often working with. And as I mentioned, and from what I understand from your projects, you're pulling a lot of inspiration from video games in your work. But what made you want to create these worlds yourself?
First of all, video games for me have always been, of course, a way to just like pass time, but I rapidly had a growing interest in specifically the worlds that were built in these video games and how the limitation of game consoles or game technology, as they progress, they basically opened new way to create a digital world. Just as a matter of a little example, we all remember the old let's say Mario, Super Mario Brother game on the NES or the early Nintendo console. The environment that we were navigating or exploring were sort of basic, very linear. And as I grew up around these new consoles, I discovered that these consoles were basically enabling artists and game creators to create very complex and beautiful and rich and strange world. And that's what was sort of my main interest in making art and video game together. So even though I tend to not say video game art, even though that's what it is, and I try to say like more of world builder or world architect, but these terms kind of cross over. As I try to explain what I do usually. Mm-hmm. You were asking about tools. So depending on the project, like usually the most common, not common project I'll do, but the sort of classic way I work with 3D world is usually going with photogrammetry. So for people who don't know, photogrammetry is like a subset of 3D scanning. So it's a way to use a digital camera, like a DSLR or cell phone camera, to quickly capture the real world and turn it into a digital model. So right. Photogrammetry is usually my main source of video game asset or like world assets. And I'll usually combine those in different way. Depending on the project I'm working on. So sometimes it's VR, sometimes it's a regular, let's say 3D game or interactive installation. So depending on the outcome, I'll usually process those in some way. Mm-hmm. So that they fit for the project's specification.
I'm understanding also that you're trying to balance this with infusing illogical or unrealistic elements, or even sort of twist the realities that you're capturing through photogrammetry. Can you talk a little bit about that process or the dynamics between those?
Sure. So since I'm using photogrammetry as like the main source of visual assets or 3D elements, these are usually sort of anchored in reality in some way because they're based off real location or photographs. So obviously the process will distort and transform the model itself. But since digital creation allows us to really transform and create illogical perspectives or strange arrangement, I try to balance it out exactly like you say, to give a sensation of knowing that these places exist in real life, but the way that we're experiencing and discovering them in the art piece is somewhat supernatural or surreal. Because there's something in me that like this idea that these places are real, but they could also just like be plucked out from a dream or something just slightly odd, whether they're a bit overscale or oversized, or everything is like slightly crooked or sheared in some way. So I try to work with that to add an element of strangeness and eeriness to these worlds. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that's an interesting twist on the way of treating your material too, of not pulling it all the way to the craziness or the medium allows for basically anything, but just make it a slightly bit more crooked or close to what the natural rendering of the object would be, but still has this twist to it.
Yeah, I think it has to be anchored in reality somehow. For me, I don't think it would make sense for the way I build the world to have things that are either not recognizable. There's a book that I really like that's called Video Game Spaces, and I wish I had the author name in my head right now, but basically there's this theory where as someone navigating a space, you could have this a space that's devoid of any recognizable object, and the same space, the same layout of the space. And if you don't have this sense of, let's say, seeing a door, seeing a tree, seeing these recognizable objects, the space just lose all its meaning and its purpose to discover. So I feel like there needs to be element that catch your attention and that makes you want to go explore in this direction. If I distorted those model or those environment too much, it would make for a really psychedelic trip or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel that you would lose the idea of like journeying toward something that catches your attention because maybe you've seen it in real life or something.
Right. Yeah. The familiarity of something that maintains the interest perhaps of the of whoever's interacting with the piece in question.
Yep.
I think what you've explained here a bit is recognizable in some of your current work on Études sur le déplacement. That is one of the projects that you're currently working on. Can you talk to us a little bit about what kind of project that is?
Sure. Well, maybe before explaining what this is, everything I do is sort of in a continuation, right? Like as my practice evolves, I'll sort of work in iteration. And before this project, I've never made a project where you could see or feel the presence of living beings. All my worlds are usually like devoid of life or like living elements. And this was the first time that you would interact as or move through the space as an avatar or like a 3D animated person being thing.
Right.
So the focus of this project is how can you deepen the connection that you have with the environment through the use of an avatar and its movement through the space. To put that in perspective, one of my recent projects was a VR project where basically, since it was point of view, you didn't see your avatar as you were moving through the space, but the VR helmet enabled the immersion so that you felt in that space. And all the previous project before that, either the camera was moving along the space, but you could not feel your own presence through that space. So it's a Solo Déplacement is really focused in that direction of if you can see a character and if you can move it yourself, what kind of choice do you make? How do you experiment the world? If you have the choice between, let's say, running, jumping, flying, falling, floating, how does that influence your navigation? And what is there a way that you prefer in that? Because obviously, let's say maybe sprinting makes you go there faster, but you lose the contemplative aspect of it. And also, like, your character make this like weird noise, like when you so it changes a bit your appreciation of the space.
Right.
So I guess that's where the research is right now. It's not done. It's not fully done, but that's what my sort of focus has been for that project. There's also like one other declination that I've showed you, which is a pocket LCD. Maybe we can talk about that now or later.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's an interesting, well, not a full contrast, but I mean, it's still in the physical domain. I mean, it's easier if you're giving some context to that, but
well, I can make the bridge right now. Basically, that research project, Etude sur le déplacement, is mostly let's call it a video game art piece, where everything where you interact with the world through a digital screen with a digital world, right? Mm-hmm. Pocket LCD is sort of the other way around, where you do have a little screen, but the way you interact with the very lo-fi digital map, let's say, is through movement in the physical space. So this project is trying to bridge or make connection between us moving through the city or moving through wherever you want, really, but having this device in your hand that has a virtual map, virtual world into it, and it has these little markers. And basically, you can try to reach those markers, but they're not linked in any way to what's in your real environment. So you might want to go to that red square marker in the device, which once you try to go there, you realize it's like in the middle of a shopping mall.
Or you might hit a wall or go out into traffic.
Exactly. So there's this strange connection or bridge that you have to make. That's like, oh, this place is, I cannot access it. So do I try to like make a shortcut or find a way to go there? Or this place is off limit, even for the digital environment. So this is in very early prototyping, sort of my, even what the map is about or the digital world. But I found this thing interesting to have like a device that allows you to see your physical space or your city, or maybe if you could take it on a camping trip if you want and try it there and see how it affect your perspective on the space.
Right. I think there's some really interesting links between the virtual and the natural space in both of these projects, and the reflection upon the avatar or the point of view or the player or the person interacting with these pieces. I also understand that you're describing some of your work to be contemplative and perhaps an anonymous approach. Do you see the lack of the avatars as part of that, or do you mind elaborating a bit on how you think about those things?
Well, definitely the lack of avatar is linked to these topic or these sort of not motivation, but these aesthetic choice that I think are important for me. There's something that is very video gamey about like having an avatar that's anchored like in a fantasy world or sci-fi world, or it sets to me the use of the avatar can set the tone, let's say, too harshly or too boldly. I think the idea of doing like anonymous video game is making like a place that I hope that everyone can find its own reading into it and not try to like push a genre on the game or the piece. I think it's more of a commentary on video game more than anything to call those like anonymous places. And I think even the contemplative aspect of it is also sort of in response to certain types of video game, like traditional video game, because obviously I think my work address or is linked to the, let's say, traditional video game world, but also video game art. There's definitely some bridge between those. But yeah, I think there's been an sort of new coming in contemplative or more slow paced video game in the recent year. And I think that there's space for this medium to not be this like hyperactive, hyper reactive thing. Of course we can have crazy sensors and way to interact with pieces like in these digital interactive pieces, but there's something very soothing to being in connection with a virtual space that you can pace yourself through, and seeing this almost not as therapy but as like a soothing journey, let's call it like that. So this is sort of the aesthetic or the way I see video game right now, which I mean, there's so many interesting video game pieces that are not anonymous at all. They try to tackle very personal issue on like human level. My work do not address or do not try to tackle human based issues and or topic. I try to let the place or the world speak for itself, and
I think that sounds that way of looking upon the crossing in between video game art and video games themselves. I think the genre sounds also like a sort of not a revolutionary action, but sort of a contrast to a fast-paced society in the way that we consume media and culture, and doing something then that sort of takes back the pace a little bit, instead of, as you're saying, a fast-paced interactive experience. I think is an interesting contrast to what a lot is being put out on perhaps the bigger market or for the bigger amount of consumers on console games, or if we're talking about video games specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Robi, to talk about your practice in these projects. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Well, thanks to you. It's my pleasure. Super fun talking to you about this.
Great. Okay, well, until next time.
Yep. See you around.
Have a good one.
You too.
That was a conversation together with Robi Prevost here on Pirate Block Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. In today's episode, we are chatting with different members of the Creative Lab at Eastern Bloc. I've been fortunate to talk to a few of them and discovering what kind of projects that they're currently working on. So let's tune into a conversation here with Ganesh Alwar that I did a few weeks ago. I have the pleasure to have Ganesh Alwar with me on the show, a visual artist experimenting with video synthesis and computer-generated content in installation work, music videos, and live performance contexts. Welcome, Ganesh. How is it going today?
Hello, Mal. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really good. How about yourself?
All good, thanks. Yeah, thanks for jumping on the show to come to speak to me. I figured that we were going to talk a bit on your process, your artistic process in general, and a bit about your work. And from what I can tell, looking a bit on what you've done in the past, you seem to be mixing different techniques in your visual practice, moving between and blending the analog and the digital. So I'm curious to hear what it is between the combination of these tools of the analog, of the video synthesis and the virtual world that you find particularly interesting to explore and combine.
Yes, for sure. So everything was started with the analog. So I started experiencing with video synthesis through some guy I met, Rob Fulmer, which is someone that is also really involved with the Eastern Bloc. We met at some show, and I saw him like playing with these VCR. I got really interested about it, and so that kind of led me to buying all the analog gear and trying to doing circuit bending with them, opening them, and trying to see what I can create out of these old discarded machines. Then I dived a little bit deeper, buying like video mixers, old video mixers such as Panasonic AV5 and other kind of old video gear, but more professional. But since they're like 20, 30 years old, they're quite accessible for young artists. So I really experimented with it, and while I was doing my bachelor degree in graphic design at UCAM. And slowly during my studies, I started to learn more about 3D generated visuals. So I tried to like combine both of them at a certain point when I started, and never quite got into a field that I particularly liked. So then I dive a little bit more deeper in digital stuff. So doing more 3D animations with Cinema 4D and dived a bit more into it because of my interest in virtual reality and augmented reality at the time. But then everything kind of in this world of digital and 3D art, everything is really tedious sometimes. You have to work a lot on your models, on your textures, you got to UV unwrap and all that stuff. So at some point I kind of got a bit tired of all this process in order to do something that looks great. And then I came back to trying to mix both of these worlds, the analog and the digital. And now I feel like I can get really a look and a feel that I like. And it's not necessarily taking like analog stuff and treating it with digital in a computer or something like that. But sometimes it's just putting both type of imagery one next to another that will create some kind of contrast and visual intentions.
Great. Yeah. I mean, if you're finding a good in-between point between the two where it can blend or even find the contrasts that are interesting, then that's a great in-between point to be able to stand with one foot in each category or in each technique.
Right.
the way that some of your visuals are developed are quite dreamlike and moving perhaps on the edge to the bizarre sometimes, of a lot of juxtaposition of different sort of elements or objects or even scales that wouldn't make sense in the natural world. And you're defining your practice that yourself a bit, of exploring dreams and nightmares. Is it the freedom from boundaries and expectations that attracts you to this sort of visual language, or what made you focus your practice on these types of expressions?
I'd say I'm really interested in the concept of consciousness, the human consciousness, and how it can bend or it can change over time depending on different stimulus you can receive, and also how, let's say, mental illness or the head chemistry can change your perception of things. I'm more specifically working on how, on the depression and mental illness issues, and how we can see events or things in what surrounds us that is different from what they are really are, and how they can be deformed and because of our perception. So that's, I'm really interested also in the concepts of like lucid dreams and other types of like not necessarily out of body experience, but where the reality is different than what we're used to. And I think that's also what leads me to these type of imagery, where some things move, but it shouldn't, or sense of scale that is deformed from reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you mentioned just slightly, one of your projects that I've done a bit of research on, that seems to be around this field that you just described a bit. One titled CEO, that is an audiovisual installation that revolves around the theme of mental illness. So I wanted to ask if you can elaborate a little bit about what this project is, or how that looks like.
Yes, that's a project I've been working on for about maybe 1 year and a half, 2 years now. So I've been working on and off on it, and I'm still in the research phase. So basically, I work with three other artists, but I'm the director of the project itself. So the idea of this project is to explore the concept of mental illness, but through basically an AI, artificial intelligence, that will be depressed. So I think a lot about artificial intelligence because I had to work a lot on a specific project with it. So I've done a project for Musée Pointe-à-Calière where we had to construct basically three characters with which you could speak in natural language. So I developed the NLU, which is the natural language understanding, to make sure that we can pinpoint an answer with the question that the viewer asked. So after this project, which was really intense and quite demanding, I thought about how I could reuse this knowledge in another type of situation. And I've been around a lot of people that had issues with mental illness in my life. Some member of my family have struggled with mental illness for a long time. I have really close friend that struggled with it also, and without necessarily being like diagnosed or something, we all have like dark moments and stuff like that. So I never really kind of thought about it before. It was some kind of subjects that I would push away and try not to really delve in it if I didn't have to. But then it became like such a big part of a bit of who I am, having helped a lot of people around me struggling with it. I decided to take that these emotions, this knowledge, and try to put it in the artificial intelligence and see if. So basically, artificial intelligence is reproducing some of humans' behavior, right? We train a machine to repeat stuff that we don't want to do because it's tedious or it takes a lot of demanding stuff. But there's also another part of the AI where people want it to feel like it's a human. So you have Siri, you have Cortana, you have all these stuff where they more like, not friends, but they assist you more into knowledge and asking questions. And we try to make them feel human so we can relate to them. And I was basically thinking about how, as a human, we would introduce our bias through the artificial intelligence and what it would look like if an AI was depressed. And why would it be depressed as well? So...
Yeah, that's a great introduction to the project. What I'm reflecting upon reading and hearing you speak about this too, my impression is that we perhaps usually hear and see artificial intelligence being described and talked about in this optimist utopian way of a way forward for our next step in technological development and how that will continue to be shaped. And I think therefore that the balance of artificial intelligence as a medium or in this project, balanced with, on the other side, depression is an interesting dynamic. Between these two, not these two worlds, but these two expressions of the two themes that the project is circulating around.
Mm-hmm. And so to give you also an impression of how it looks like. Basically, we just finished a residency at La Maison de la Culture Marie-Houé in Villemar. So we did a two-week residency where we built like the installation for the first time. So basically, there are multiple modules in the installation, and they are not necessarily an exact reproduction of like an organ, but we try to see how the machine itself tried to construct the body, because it's an artificial intelligence that has been like trained to be a human, but basically it doesn't have any body because it's only a machine. So we kind of dove into an idea where it would try to create itself a body that will mimic the human in order to try to get out of the depression. So we have a center module where it's more a bit like the brain, where it's a multi-screen installation. We have another section where it's more like the memory, where it's not always lit, but in some moment where it's a bit more calm, there's something playing on the screen there that reflects more like that memory. There's what's the word in English? Les poumons.
The lungs.
The lungs, thank you. I had so we have another installation where it's the lungs, where we try to make, so there's a motor that that blows into big like sacks that looks like lungs. And depending on the position of the user, it either goes fast or more slowly, depending on its state. And we really try to have a conversation with the user, and depending what type of action he does, the machine reacts differently. So if he's in a, let's say he's in a panic phase, then some of your action will maybe put him to like ease him and make it feel better. But sometimes you can also make him worst. So then the music will be more intense, the lights will be more intense as well. And so you have to kind of feel how the machine is doing in order to either calm it, or you can also try to just see its limit and see if it will break or have a breakdown. So,
I figured that we were going to touch a little bit upon another project that you currently have in the works as well, which is a performance, but also the title of a transdisciplinary creative collective called Beats, where it seems like the way that this performance is put on aims to blur a bit the lines between the different mediums in quite the interesting way, where the movement of the dance in this performance affects how the visuals are seen and also linked to the audio and the music. Can you explain a bit on how that works?
Yes, of course. So that's a great question, because I was working on this project right now, just before her interview at the lab. So on this project, I'm more the technological director. So I'm working with three other artists, but they are more in charge of the performance and the visual aspects of the show. On my side, I'm working more in the technological part that kind of blends all other disciplines together. So we're building, so I've been working on this device for maybe a year now, and we're just about to close it and finish the first prototype. So basically we're building a big, it's a very big stick of LEDs. So it's a lit stick, which is 36 degrees and 360 degrees, excuse me. And so we have multiple sensors in the stick. So we have a gyro, an accelerometer, and basically it's in the middle of the stick, and the dancer has to, can move around with it, and we're receiving the information about the angle and the speed of the movement out of it. And so with these kind of data, we can influence either the visuals or the audio through, let's say, a filter on a synth that is playing, or also the color or the brightness of some visuals. And on the other side, the stick is bi-directional, so it can receive input from another member of the show. So So we can link this to a parameter on the visuals, and or we can send commands to the stick that will lit in different patterns. So it's been quite a challenge, because it does measure 6 feet high, and we need to use a double diffuser setup in order to not see each pixels of the LEDs on the stick. So we need to enter all the technology in about, let's say, half a inch diameter, which is the smallest diffusion tube. And everything is wireless. So that's another quite a big challenge in order to power all the LEDs and the microcontrollers in such space. That will last long enough for the show.
Great. Again, sounds like quite the involved and structured process to make everything sort of speak together. I'm curious to, since the blending in between the performers are quite advanced, I'm curious to hear how the space that the performance is being put in plays a role into either how the performance is perceived or how it is played out as well, the physical space where you're putting it on. Is there anything to say about that?
The physical space is quite interesting, because I don't want to speak too much about the show, not to to spoil anybody, because we will play at New Tech in the Dome at SAT in 2 weeks. But basically, at the start of the show, where the setup is not quite complete, where there will be objects lying around, but this there's not like a stage like you're used to in other other shows, where you would go and it's a clear stage where, you know, where the performer will be. So basically, it's like every objects are more laid around the place, and slowly the performers will construct the stage and where they will perform later on the show. So there's really some kind of interesting way about using the space there. But then it ends up really creating some kind of a square where they will perform. But still, the main performer can move around in the space, and even with the spectators, she can get in with them and circling around them or stuff like that. So it's really for having the stick, it's really big, but it doesn't constrain her too much into her movement, because it's wireless, she can go all around, so there's no issue about that. But there's a big sense of space for now, since it's like we're gonna do our world premiere at Mutech in 2 weeks. We're going into a little bit more traditional spacing in the environment, but we're really looking forward to be able to have maybe more immersive setup where we could go around the spectators, or even we could be 360 degrees where the spectators will be around the center stage. So we're really trying to see how we can play with how we present the show in there.
Great. I mean, that sounds like a very interesting experience, only from the public side of view. So at the time of listening, or this episode airing, unfortunately Mutech will have passed, but hopefully the performance goes smooth, and that Beats is being able to be put on into more scenes in the future where we can experience that. And with that, Ganesh, we have run out of time, unfortunately, today, but I'm happy that you could shine some light upon some of these interesting projects that you're working with. So best of luck with those.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to the show again. It's been quite a pleasure to speak with you.
Great. Well, have a good one and see you around.
Likewise.
You just listened to a conversation together with Ganesh Alwar here on CKUT 90.3 FM, currently tuned into Pirate Block Radio. I am chatting with some of the lab members of the creative space at Eastern Block and discovering what kind of projects that they're currently tinkering on. We still have one person left on today's lineup, and this show was produced on the road, so be prepared for just a slight shift in audio quality. I have the pleasure to talk to Pipo Pierre-Louis, who is a longtime member that works with a range of mediums and techniques, both in sound and video, through installation work and other ways, with the DIY mindset close to heart. Thanks for joining me today, Pipo.
Hey, Malte, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
So when we spoke earlier, but you mentioned that you're currently working on this multi-layered project, a sort of augmented journal that also ties into biometrics. Could you shine some light upon, what this project is about?
Yeah, well, it's funny because it's a project that started like the beginning of this year, but I still haven't had the time to put it together, and you'll see why. So like at the turn of 2021, my life had many changes, like personally, just lost my job, separated and stuff. So I moved out of the city, and in the midst of all this change, I was thinking how to record or how to leave a trace of all these things that were like changing. So I was talking with some friends, and like, a friend of mine suggested me to do some journaling, which I've never done. Well, I tried once, but it never worked out. So I was like, okay, fine. But since I knew that I already tried once and never worked, I was like, well, now I have to find a better way of doing it or making it in some kind of project, because otherwise I know I'll never do it. So after working like 3 years for Rafael Lozano in his studio, at the beginning of this year, I had like this stack of office cards, like studio cards, like presentation cards, you know, the small ones. And I was like, well, let's keep this, was whatever, and so put it in the recycling. I was like, maybe I'll do something with it. And then this like journaling project came on, and I was thinking, well, I could use this card as like my journal. So in a way of like making the transition from this 3 year period of my life into my new setup now that I'm living in the countryside and everything. So from being in the city to a very lonely setup where I'm just an hour and a half from Montreal, not seeing many people. So I was like, okay, this is kind of starting to take shape. And so I took these cards and I decided to use them as a support for my journaling. So I took my best pen I could just to start handwriting stuff on these cards. But then I was thinking, what can I do to not only record my thoughts? I'm not a writer, so what can I do to make it more interesting to someone that will actually read it eventually or not, you know? And just so, and then I was thinking about this layer of biometrics. So which biometrics could I record while I'm doing this journaling to show people the kind of mood I was at the time and I'm still like now? Because my plan is to do it for at least a year, so 355 cards. And so then again, talking with some friends like and stuff, they told me, well, why don't you record your heart rate? Because apparently there's like a way of calculating heart rate variations, and that can indicate your mood, like either you're stressed or you're relaxed or your focus level while you're doing some activity. So I found this very interesting, and I started to think on how can I implement this with what I was already starting, which is like just writing on this set of business cards. So what I thought is like, well, let's record my heart rate and calculate the heart rate variation so I can later on cut the edge of the cards with the curve that's the result of the biometrics I'm recording. So like that, over 365 days, I would have this volume, because now the card like stacked together will like have this volume and this shape of like the different days and my heart rate variation like cut on them.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting way to sort of infuse the not only the personal link through the writing, but also make it even more intimate or connected to yourself or to the individual in question, because that is so individual, the change of heart rate. There's only one that could come from, you know.
Yes, but it's true. And one thing also is that I'm not a writer, so, and I have like this very small card to write eventually all my feelings on it. So I was like, well, maybe it's not the best way. So let's augment this journal. So as I see it, it's like some kind of augmented journal where I can show also the mood somehow. So like just as a background, if like the curve I get is staggered and like irregular, it would mean that I'm like in a bad or stressed or like unfocused mood. Well, if it's like close to a sine wave, it would mean that I'm like in a good mood or like excited or happy about it. So I'm really looking forward to see what it's going to do. So for now, what I'm doing is just the writing and getting like my interface that's going to allow me to record all these biometrics, like the hardware needed. So that's where the project is right now. So I've been just testing stuff out, and eventually I'll, once my hardware will be set, I can just start and forget about the tech and start like actually doing the journaling.
Right. So will your recording of your heart rate or the sort of monitoring be done at the same time as the writing is done each and every day, so that they're sort of connected, what you're feeling in the moment of writing the text down? Is that how it would work?
Exactly. Precisely that, actually. So I have this sensor, heart rate sensor that I made a clip for, so I can clip that on my earlobe. And the idea is to have this small device that is going to record all the data individually. Not, I don't want to look at any computer screen or being able to do it like away from like my studio. So the idea is to have this device that will record the data while I'm writing. And then what I will do, and this is another part that I've been working on in the lab, is cutting the business cards with the laser just to make the curve that corresponds to the heart rate on the edge of the card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds interesting the way that you make these different, not worlds collide, because it's all your individual world and perspective, but taken from different life events and personal reflections, that it will be both from the past and then in the very instant of production as well, for such a long period of time that a year in a row, where every day for a year in a row would be.
Yeah. So it's funny because I think it's also tuned into what a lot of people are living, you know, because it was a turn of the year that like COVID started like badly and like, or the second wave and stuff. So a lot of people turn into introspection a bit more. So I guess I'm part of those people. And at the same time, since I like moved out of the city, well, like when you're outside of the city, there's a lot more chances to get introspective than when you're living around people. So I thought that was also a good timing for doing these kind of things. Lately, what I've been thinking is, because just to add another layer, I hope it's not too much. I'll decide if it's too much or not. But how can I integrate with my main, or what I do consider like my main concern in art is like sound. So how could I integrate that into this? And a friend of mine made a project that actually inspired me for this, Patrick Saint-Denis. So where he would like have a sensor that will produce a certain curve. And instead of using that over time, he transformed this into a sound wave, like a synthesized sound wave, like a wave table. So I was thinking that what I could do is like take the different samples from this heart rate curve that I'm gonna have and turn them into wave table too, so I can actually hear what like this shape will sound like. And eventually I can make more derived things and other variations on this project, because I'll have like 365 very unique wave tables that I can play with. And yeah, I mean, and that's like a very exciting part that I just like looking forward to, because it will finally integrate, I think, all of me kind of thing, all of what I'm interested on, like in one single project. So it's just a really funny turn.
Right. Now, so many layers and possible extractions from that data of compiling it to other mediums, as you're saying, to sound and audio for extending it even further. Just the fact of being so coherent with a 365 sort of expanding project, opens up a lot of doors just to have that complete cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's see where that takes me. But I'm very excited to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like some kind of discipline. It'll become necessarily some kind of discipline, because I don't think I've done anything in my life for 365 days, like every day. And it's like coming with all this new setup I have, I think it makes sense to start some kind of ritual. So I'm very interested in rituals right now. So,
right,
like in my other projects too, it's all about like these rituals and like with the different concerns I have and stuff like that. Yeah.
It sounds like it goes in line with the focus on oneself and being able to focus on having a reoccurring pattern. It's all, yeah, I think that ties into self-care and sort of self-presence. So even that timeline, I think, goes in line with the ideas behind the project and being more with oneself, both socially but also in the project itself.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the feeling I have.
Mm-hmm. So people, I think that we're running out of time, but I'm curious to hear, does the project have a title yet, or is that still to be defined as well?
No, the project has a title. So I called it The First Year of the Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, at the turn of the year, like, I had so many changes and I needed a way to visualize my year. It's crazy how this has become like so personal, but yes. So I needed a way to visualize and like see what my year and my future life would like to be. And so I made a small fire like in New Year's Eve, and I decided that like my year was gonna be like this small fire. So my journal will be like the first year of the fire. So
great, great.
Yeah,
best of luck with the continuing development, and I guess I'll have to check in a year's time or so to see where things are at.
Exactly. Yes. Cool. It will be really good. I hope I'll have some sound to play too. That would be great on the radio, I think.
For sure. Okay, well, thanks a lot, people, for coming on to talk with me today. And best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was everything from today's show on the lab members of Eastern Bloc, where we've had time to talk to Robbie Provost, Ganesh Alloir, and Pipo Pierre-Louis. These are just a few examples of all of the different types of projects that you can realize within the lab of Eastern Bloc. And Eastern Bloc has just recently moved to a new space, now opening up their creative lab for new members. So if you're looking for a creative space with access to a big diversity of tools and just an overall creative and stimulant environment, then I recommend you to go over to easternblock.ca and check out the website and our socials for more information about that. In terms of Pirate Block Radio, I'll be back next month again, same place, same time as always. But if you can't wait until then, you can always surf into Mixcloud and type in Pirate Block Radio to access all of the old archives. See you next month. Take care until then.
CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal.
De symptômes d'allure grippale ou s'apparentant à ceux de la COVID-19, tels que la fièvre, la toux ou la perte du goût ou de l'odorat, ou si vous avez été en contact avec une personne infectée par le virus, il est essentiel de passer un test de dépistage et de respecter les consignes d'isolement, même si vous êtes vacciné. Le dépistage demeure un des meilleurs moyens de limiter les éclosions. Pour en savoir plus, visitez québec.ca/test-covid-19. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Oh, merci beaucoup, Madame Saint-Onge. J'aurais fait l'intro de Francis et les exerciceurs sur les ondes de CKUT. Pour cette émission, un hommage à Genesis, Breyer, puis Orridge. Bonne écoute.